You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, guys? A little bit of a different episode today. So I know that me and Adam have yet to touch on Lance signing in LA with the Lakers and the Al Jefferson waiver. And I promise you we have thoughts, and we will get to that on tomorrow's episode, along with any other signings that happen today. But we couldn't find a time to record this Monday evening, now Tuesday for you guys. So instead, it actually worked out really well that I talked to Matt Shook at Locked On Pistons. I talked to him about the Central Division and Glenn Robinson signing in Detroit. And I also talked to Nick Angstad at Locked On Mavs about Doug McDermott and what his skills he has and what he could bring to the table in Indiana. And it really worked out with the timing that they were both Pacer-centric topics and could be on this episode. So you'll hear a lot of people that aren't me or Adam on this one, with Matt and Nick being here. But it's still really good. A lot of Pacers stuff, a lot of general NBA stuff, and the Pacer division. So it'll be a good episode. So first up, we'll have the segment with Matt Shook, and then we'll have Nick on. So just strap in and get ready. It's going to be fun.
And now we're being joined by friend of the show, Tony East of Locked On Pacers, the host there, also the site expert for 8 points, 9 seconds. You can find him on Twitter at TEastNBA. And Tony from Pacers Land, thanks for joining us here.
Matt, thanks for having me. Love doing these Locked On crossovers with other teams.
Absolutely. Keep it in the family, as we say. Yes. So Glenn Robinson III, obviously Detroit Pistons fans pretty familiar with him already from his work in Ann Arbor with the Michigan Wolverines. But Tony, wanted to get your perspective on how his three seasons in Indiana went lately. Let's start with the good. What should Pistons fans be excited about with GR3?
Well, the good is that he's come from Indiana to Michigan before, because he went to high school in Indiana too. So you should know that he's comfortable with that transition. He'll be happy and comfy back home. But on the actual basketball court in the NBA, you can find him being one of the best three-point shooters in the corner you'll find. And across his three seasons in Indiana, he shot 40% his first season from the corner, 60% his second year, and 47% last year. He just buries that shot every time he gets it. When he came back from his injury last year, which I'm sure we'll have to talk about that in the bad momentarily, for probably the first 15 or so games when he was back, his role on offense was very limited, and they just planted him in the corner. You know, he'd cut over there and just stand there the whole possession. He still found a way to be effective because he can knock down that shot so well. He doesn't really try to force anything either. Kind of pretty low turnover guy. Turnover rate last year was 5.3%, which is very, very good. He's a really good off-ball guy, mostly as you can tell by spotting up in the corner. He's a really good cutter. He's just a smart player, so he knows when to cut too, and that's a lot of being good at cutting. And most importantly is that he's got a semblance of being good on D. He's the best Pacers wing guy at staying in front of guys on the perimeter outside of Victor Oladipo. He's got a pretty long wingspan, and he's athletic enough to stay in front of pretty much anybody who's not a superstar. So there's a lot to like, both between being a good, efficient scorer and being a good wing defender.
Now, like you mentioned, the ankle injury suffered in training camp, missed about 58 games to start the season after surgery to repair that. Was the explosiveness still there? This is a guy who won the dunk championship a year ago, last February 2017. Was it still there? And was that maybe the biggest reason that he's not, you know, back in Indiana, or maybe back getting a better deal out in the open market?
I think for sure it's why he's not back in Indiana. There were a lot of people thinking that he could even eventually reclaim the starting spot last year over Bojan Bogdanović before he went down with the injury. That's how good he was the season prior to that. But the injury really set that all back. And like I said, he was very limited immediately after his return. But they got him going a little bit for probably the last 10 games he played. I can remember the exact play. I noticed it. They were playing the Warriors. They ran an inbounds play where he curled around a screen, took Kevin Durant off the dribble, took a fadeaway from the elbow, and just drilled it right over him. From that point on, you could see that he had a little more explosiveness. They were trusting him with some more actions, letting him handle the ball a little more. He even had a nice, you know, dunk against the Celtics in their next game after that. He really came alive after that with a little bit more ball handling duties. And it's not like he was playmaking or anything like that, but he, you know, they were letting him do more than just being a spot up guy in the corner. And we saw he could do that before the ankle injury, which is encouraging for you guys mostly. In 2016-17, he started 27 games at shooting guard, actually. And he was excellent in those minutes, fit really well next to Paul George. And that's what I think made him such an appealing guy to take over a starting role. But yeah, he was very limited at first after the injury, but he came alive at the end and was able to get in some playoff minutes too. So I think he's fully recovered from that now.
Anything else that stands out about Glenn Robinson that that fans should know about that we may not, we kind of lost track of him maybe over the past 4 years that maybe we don't know about?
Well, this is always something you never know when you sign a guy on a new team. He's a great dude. I guess Detroit would know that because he went to Michigan, actually. But Glenn Robinson is just a fantastic guy. He's always been so nice to the media, so nice to fans, loves hanging around all the facilities, works his butt off. Just a great dude. And you know, that means a lot. And I think that'll fit in well with what Detroit has going right now. But other than that, you know, remember that he won that dunk contest. You already brought that up, but is that, you know, it's hard to call him sneaky athletic when he's won a dunk contest, but he's way more explosive than you'd think. I believe he hurt his ankle actually dunking in training camp last year. I'm almost positive, actually. So those kind of things, I think if he gets his explosiveness back, you'll notice right away that he's way more athletic than you'd think watching, you know, just clips of him from playing. So just keep those things in mind when you see him for the first time.
And you mentioned the move from Indiana to Michigan as a high schooler. He was kind of an unheralded recruit when he was committed to John Beilein at Michigan and then moved up the prospect rankings as his senior year moved on and really turned into a really solid prospect, and then even blew that out of the water with the 2 years he had at Michigan, which were showed off a lot. And I think a lot of us that followed Michigan back then thought that he might be the best pro prospect out of that group that included Nick Stauskas, the Big Ten Player of the Year, and Tim Hardaway Jr. and Trey Burke as well. So he's pretty much lived up to that when healthy, you would say, at Indiana.
He might be the best player of that group in the pros now. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Stauskas had a nice run with Brooklyn at the end of last year, and Hardaway has been on and off during his career. But yeah, like you said, but all those guys are kind of, after disappointing starts to their career, all those guys are kind of rising up a little bit now.
Was Mitch McGarry on that team too?
Yeah, McGarry came in with Robinson and obviously the all-world recruit coming in. But he's fallen off since then.
Random tangent, but that Trey Burke against Kansas was still one of my favorite highlight YouTube videos of all time.
I was living in Springfield, Missouri at the time and watching that game with a bunch of Kansas fans, so made it even more special.
Quite the game. You'll there's already some connection to GR3 to Michigan, which will be awesome. And I'm sure, I wonder if that had anything to do with his decision. You know, I saw in Shams Charania's tweet that Robinson was happy with the money, which he's made minimum contracts his entire career up till this point. So I think that's going to be that was a big deal for him to get his first payday. And I think with Detroit, I might be speaking out of place because I'm not as in tune with the team as you, but they're pretty light on the wing. Being able to add a guy like Robinson who can play, you know, two ways on the court and play wing is huge for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting the bigger wings that can guard those small forwards and even maybe some smaller power forwards, because they had a lot of glut of shooting guards. But really just Stanley Johnson was the only, you know, quote unquote, small forward that they had on the roster before getting Glenn Robinson. But Indiana, Tony, was a team that was a lot of interest going into them this offseason. One of the only teams that had some cap room, had a lot of decisions to make in terms of some player options and some possible waivings they could have made. I guess that's probably not the right word. Waivers, whatever. But now they make a surprise deal right after midnight, or maybe I guess it was one of those that came in before midnight that they passed along. But Dougie McBuckets heading to Indiana, 3 years, $22 million. What's the scuttlebutt around Pacers Nation about the reaction to that move?
Yeah, most people right off the cut, like McDermott, but think he's overpaid. Zach Lowe's point was that he got a little bit over the tax pyramid level exception, which is going to be the bidding for a lot of these guys, just because so many teams are capped out. And I agree with him. I think that's kind of how it went down. But I do like the fit for him because he's tall and can shoot really well from the outside. The Pacers bench was starved for three-point shooting last year between Sabonis and Corey Joseph and Lance Stephenson not being excellent shooters. They'll be happy to have that. And I think he matches the play style of their starting small forward, Bojan Bogdanovic, well enough that they don't have to, you know, alter their game plan at all when they make that substitution. And he can play a little four because, like I said, he's 6'8". So I think he fits really well, and I think shooting is something this Pacers team needed. So that will be nice to have, and I think he could fit really well. It's just, you know, you never know about the money until you see him on the court.
Yeah, I followed McDermott's career pretty much throughout, and I saw him play at Creighton a couple times when he was in college. And things that people, you mentioned him playing a little bit of four, the things that people don't understand about McDermott is he came in as kind of a Missouri Valley Conference crafty power forward type that scored around the basket really well and developed and lost the weight and became the perimeter player and showed the flashes of the shooting throughout his college career and then developed that as he became a pro. So I think that maybe the reputation of being just kind of a shooter is a little bit unfair. And I think that Doug can, as time goes on, maybe show off some of those things that he had early on in his career as well.
I am looking. Yeah, you shot 65% at the rim last year, and I agree with you that, you know, that could be a skill of his, being a little more inside outy, and I think that'll help a lot too. Just having a guy who can maybe create his own shot out of the post is just huge for your second unit. And it'll be fun to watch him and GR3 possibly match up in the division games this year.
Yeah, I want to talk about the division a little bit, because obviously it's not the biggest deal in the world to win the Central Division, you know, compared to playoff seedings and everything like that. And the Pistons didn't have a playoff seed last year, so there was no need to worry about that. But what do you think as you look at the Chicago's and the Milwaukee's and Ersan Ilyasova kind of being along the lines of McDermott is a little bit surprising to me anyways, that you would use a lot of that cap, that whatever cap room or mid-level exceptions that you have available right away on guys like McDermott and Ilyasova. What do you think as you look at the landscape, and especially throw Cleveland into that mix too, of a team that I believe they lost a free agent yesterday as well? What do you think about the division right now?
Yeah, you got to say that the Cavs seem like the worst team in the division now after that departure. Depends what happens with Kevin Love, really. But they could end up being near the bottom with Chicago. You know, both of those teams don't look too good. But I think really, you know, Milwaukee's got Giannis and they just added Ilyasova. But, you know, their ceiling is kind of limited. They have a new coach. We'll see what happens with them. And Detroit really underachieved last year with only 39 wins. But now they have a summer with all their new guys. Like, I think between Milwaukee, Indiana, and Detroit, you could have quite the battle for the division crown next year.
Yeah, and I think when we talked early on in the season, I maybe it was when we were talking or around the time that I mentioned that Indiana could be that playoff team that falls off going into the second half of last season. And they certainly proved that that wasn't the case, and then gave LeBron a seven-game series there. I mean, the reaction among Pacers fans do you feel like that they're just scratching the surface with this group, and that the expectations are to take it another step or two steps further going into next season?
I think the question is, you know, do they try to get another star? Do they bank more on Miles Turner? Because, you know, you always hear with team building in the NBA, to win, you need stars to win in the playoffs. And they got one, you know, in Oladipo. They'll have him for a while. So the question now is, you know, is this their ceiling? They have this one star and the role players around him, or can they make another splash and move to get another guy and take it to the next level? You know, obviously Doug McDermott's not the guy you add to take your team up 5 to 10 wins, but, you know, he does help the team. So I think the front office thinks it's going to be a long game, and they're going to count on some internal development to get that other star, maybe in Miles Turner, and take him to the next level. But it seems like they expect their ceiling to be a bit off in the distance.
Well, Tony East, one of our favorite guests here on Locked On Pistons and the host of Locked On Pacers. Find him on Twitter at TEastNBA, also the site expert at 8 Points 9 Seconds. Thanks, bud, for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. So, guys, I hope you enjoyed my talk with Matt there. It's going to be interesting to watch GR3 on the Pistons, and the Central Division should be really fun next year. But now let's hop over to my chat with Nick Angstad at Locked On Mavs to talk about Doug McDermott, what he could bring to the Pacers next year. All right, guys, now we're going to talk about some Doug McDermott stuff. And to do that with me, I got somebody who just got to watch McDermott for 26 games in Dallas, Nick Angstad over at Locked On Mavs. Nick, first off, how are you doing in free agency so far?
We're doing great over here. Would have loved to bring Doug back, but DeAndre Jordan's good for that 1 year. It's a great contract for him. And secretly, Tony, I'll tell you this, and everybody on Locked On Mavs, they know this, but I grew up a Lakers fan. So right now is kind of an interesting time for me as a fan.
I also grew up not a Pacers fan. I will not announce my allegiance on the show, but you love to hear stuff like that. So you can watch our boy Lance, who we just heard talk about on the first segment here, which will be exciting. But this needs to be focused on McDermott. I just feel like Pacers fans don't know a ton about him other than he's a tall guy who can shoot really well. I had a guy on Twitter tweet at me and said, it'll be great that Doug McDermott can go back to where he played college basketball at Creighton. Creighton is in Nebraska to that man. But it will be exciting to have him here. What were your impressions of McDermott last year?
Well, in that guy's defense, the entire Midwest is just like one state, right? Like,
to most people, it is, yes.
It's New York, LA, and then everywhere else. Florida, I guess, is its own place too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Doug McDermott, like you said, we only got to see him up close for 26 games. But, I mean, he shot the lights out. He shot almost 50% from three in Rick Carlisle's system. The system was just really, really good for him. He's also a really, really good cutter. The guy has learned really well how to play off of the ball, which I think is obviously super important for him because his ball skills aren't exactly the greatest. But So he does little things where he just finds open spaces. He gets open. He cuts to the basket. His first basket for the Mavericks actually was a fast break dunk in transition. We were like, wait a minute, what? I thought this guy only shot threes. He's not really giving you too much else other than that. I mean, he only averaged like 2.5 rebounds and like 1 assist in his time with Dallas. But he fit really well in that backup group. The Mavericks were playing. They played this weird backup group that was super effective. It was like J.J. Barea, Devin Harris, Yogi Ferrell, Dirk, and Dwight Powell. And then as soon as Devin Harris went to Denver and we brought Doug McDermott in, he slid right in and played really, really well with that group. And they were one of the most effective in the NBA last year.
IU graduate, Yogi Ferrell.
Yeah.
I'm glad he got that qualifying offer. That makes me so happy.
He's still out there, though. I don't know if the pace wheel. Isaac and I always thought that he would end up on the Pacers, but we'll see.
Yeah, maybe someday. Not if he's restricted, though. And they already have 3-point guards. That's a different discussion. but yeah, I'm glad you said the fast break dunk thing. You know, I remember at Creighton, I actually just talked to Lockdown Pistons host Matt Shook about this. I might have probably just said his last name wrong, but when he went to Creighton, he was like a power forward and had more post skills, and he kind of blended himself into the shooter. So I know he can work well around the basket. And if I'm reading this right, he shot 65% from 0 to 3 feet in Dallas, which is phenomenal. And I look, you know, those kind of things make me hopeful that he can be more than just a shooter. And I think that from what you're gathering, he can be more than that, especially with the cutting.
Yeah, he's just a good player to have on the floor with you, especially if you got guys that can, you know, dish and, yeah, just playmakers. You want playmakers in the NBA, but once you have those playmakers, then you need to surround them with guys like Doug McDermott, guys that can actually finish plays, whether that's around the rim or in Doug's case, you know, cutting to the rim or just shooting up spot up shots. And he can shoot all kinds of threes too. It's not just, you know, standing spot ups. He can do the coming around a corner. He can, you know, shoot off movement. Like, there's just a lot of really good opportunities for him to finish plays for the Pacers. So I think it's a pretty good signing. I was really surprised by the years and the dollars. I was really surprised that he got that deal. He played for like $3.2 million last year. So obviously he really wanted to get paid and kind of cash in at least once. I think he's going to be 27, or he is 27 already. So he's kind of getting
27 next season. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's getting kind of the end of it. Now we were sad though, that they broke up the Iowa brothers. And Harrison Barnes and Doug McDermott. Those two guys, they played high school basketball together. And Doug actually drove Harrison Barnes around, because for the longest time, Barnes didn't have his driver's license. So Doug was
really,
Doug was his, awesome. His chauffeur for a little bit. And Harrison Barnes also told us, and there's I think it's an SI cover, a Slam basketball cover that proves it, that Doug McDermott was a huge ladies man in high school.
So, no, I tweeted it. It was a Sports Illustrated cover. Yeah.
He did really well, apparently, for himself.
It looks like the Larry Bird one from like the 80s. It's the same style with the cheerleaders and Doug McDermott. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is beautiful.
He didn't quite get to that level.
we'll see. I'm not really super interested in that part of Doug McDermott's side at this point.
I was talking about just basketball. He didn't get to the level of basketball like Larry Bird, but. He this is important too. He's the son of a coach. His dad, I think, still coaches at Creighton, and so that's important for basketball IQ level. You know, he's just always been around the game, and you're getting a smart basketball player.
And his dad also followed me on Twitter, so shout out to his dad.
He did the same thing with a whole bunch of Dallas people when Doug came to Dallas. He did not follow me though, so I'm gonna hold that against him.
Wow,
but he followed Isaac. He followed a bunch of Mavs Moneyball people, but did not make it to me, I guess.
Gosh, that's tragic. Last thing for my on-court questions, how's his defense? Is it better than advertised, or is it as meh as people say it is?
Yeah, it's about as meh as people say it is. It's fine. It's fine. He's fairly mobile, so it's not like he's, you know, remember Steve Novak towards the end of his career? It's just kind of like he's out there and he's trying his best, but not getting anything done. It's fine. You're not getting too much from him, but he can stay in front of a guy. He can, you know, he's going to swipe at loose balls and he'll hustle, but you know, he's not locking down anybody.
Indiana fans will love him if he has good fundamentals. So that's it. I can really ask for.
He does.
I mean, unless you got anything else on McDermott, I think we're good.
No, that's what I got. That's 26 games worth of knowledge right there, guys.
Yeah, you were all listening to a Mavs expert, one of the few teams that swept the Pacers this year. The Pacers swept the Warriors, and the Mavs swept the Pacers. So chew on that knowledge.
Wow. Yeah,
something else there. But thanks for coming on, man. What do you got anything you want to promote?
Yeah, just Locked On Mavs. We're doing all kinds of stuff. We talked all about how, you know, LeBron affects now the Mavericks yesterday, and so we got into that. And it's fun to be a Mavericks fan right now. So if you're looking for a team, maybe the Mavericks. They got Luka Doncic, Dennis Smith Jr. I know some people listen to these randomly, and they're like, well, "Let me just try this one." Well, go try ours.
Yeah, Luka Doncic bandwagon. I am on it, so I would recommend you listen to his rookie year over at Locked On Mavs. Thanks for coming on, Nick. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks for listening to this episode, guys. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about more free agency, and the Al Jefferson stuff will come on in a second. So tune in for that.